problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more.
Okay, and I have said that, so I would like to take that back. He's really not that much of a lightweight. And as far as, and I have to say this, he hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee you.
Okay. Moving on.
Are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
I'm Doug Stanhope, and if you're listening to this podcast, don't take my word for it. I got tricked into this in a merch booth.
It's the homemade broadcast.
The what podcast?
The homemade broadcast.
Homemade?
Homemade broadcast.
The homemade podcast.
Yes, sir.
This is very homemade right here. This shit right here, that homemade.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the homemade broadcast, HMBRadio.com, on Radio St. Pete, Sundays, 6:15 p.m., Mondays, 10:15 p.m. Catch the replay, and you can always get it on podcast at HMBRadio.com. Make sure you go like the Facebook page, HMB Radio, on Facebook. It's all easy. Twitter, home_made_man. My name is Will Koontz, host of this here program, the homemade broadcast. Welcome to you, the Donald Trump train. Keeps rolling. There's a little alliteration there. And he talked about that he's carrying quite the bat on him, apparently, in the last debate. So good for him. It's good to hear. This podcast is brought to you by Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue, slybar.com. Joe and Lauren also pack a huge bat, and they like serving beers. So go see them and enjoy some of those. So I got my guest here today already, so let's just get right into it. The more time, the better. This way I don't embarrass myself further more than I need to. I'm going to have somebody else take the reins a little bit. I have today a man who showed up at Sly Bar not too long ago and informed me that he is banned from the whole comedy scene in Gainesville, Florida. So what he does is he spends some time traveling a lot up to Jacksonville a couple days a week and then travels all the way down to Tampa Bay and hits the open mics down here. He has a show in a couple weeks at the Pegasus Lounge. His name is Chris Heist.
How's it going?
Good, man. Make sure you get right up in that microphone.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. That's perfect.
Hell yeah.
How you doing?
All right. How you doing?
How was the drive?
Oh, usual.
The huge? Lots of traffic?
Yeah.
Do you usually travel a lot when it's the rush hour time? That's usually probably the time you have to get here.
It's oftentimes when I'm leaving Gainesville. So, but there's not often a traffic jam, but on occasion.
Do you live in Gainesville?
Yeah, right by the university.
So I want to hear the story about how you got
Hell yeah.
barred from Gainesville. as far as performing?
I mean, it's a small town, so there's not that many shows, but there's two open mics, one main showcase, you know, where they bring in a headliner from out of town.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of guitar open mics that comics sometimes do, too.
Is it that's all they have as far as comedy-wise in Gainesville? That's it?
Yeah.
That's surprising because it's a college town, and you would think that the college kids would have an interest in that.
Recently, I think just this week, somebody started another one on a Friday. But, yeah.
It's a good night.
So, yeah.
Are you going to try to hit that one?
I'm going to try. I asked the dude if I could do it, and he said, you know, I said in my band already, he said, well, not yet. So you
at least one.
Yeah, exactly. I'll get one shot at it.
So it wasn't, I guess I thought maybe there was more.
No, the strange thing was like, there basically are, there was eight places where you could do stand-up. Five of those are guitar open mics.
Okay.
One of which still lets me do it. He's he's really big on free speech, and even though he's had multiple people pressure him to be like, no, this can't fly, he's stood up for me the whole time. But that's just a guitar open mic. It's not a comedy show, you know? The two open mics, one of which was awesome, never a problem, and it just so happened that one of the comics who had previously banned me from his monthly show bought the bar and said...
That's very unlucky.
Yeah, he said, you're never performing here. It's nothing personal. Your material's just bad for business.
Well, it is personal, a little bit.
Well, a little bit, but...
How can it be bad for business if it's an open mic?
I think
it's personal.
I don't know. Well, they do get complaints. Even the former owners had gotten complaints from some customers, but they just said, what the fuck? I mean, what the hell? I have a bad habit. So it's like, at the time, that's what he said to me. I don't know that that's, you know... if it's personal or not, but, you know, I got nothing against them. It's one of those things that just sucks about our society that oftentimes businesses fold in the face of customer complaints, and no customers ever complain about censorship, usually.
Right.
They don't go up to the bar and go, hey, if you ever censor this guy, I'm never drinking here again.
Right. Yeah, because there's no incentive, I guess, to do that.
Right. I hope there will eventually be one. I think if, you know, a slight sliver of change in the culture could, you know, when people see other people being phased out for whatever political reasons or business reasons, they would stand up and go, no, I'm not going to, you know, put that whatever consumer pressure the other way. But, yeah, it's probably a long ways from being a reality.
There's a guy in Canada who's a comic up there. I think his name is Mike Ward. Who is currently being prosecuted for a joke.
I heard a little bit about it, but...
Let me look it up just to see what's going on here. I should have probably done this earlier. Mike Ward is such a common name that you're not going to get what you're looking for, really.
Yeah, and it's not in the States, so, like, I don't know what Canada's laws are regarding saying things, but...
Well, they don't have the First Amendment
there,
of course, so... let's see. Quebec comedian Mike Ward will argue his constitutional right to freedom of expression permits him to make fun of a young man with a condition that causes disfigurement and deformities. So this is a CBC, and I can already tell they're kind of making it. You know how people say things instead of just explaining it? He made a joke about this guy. They got to say, like, he was purposely attacking him. A young man with a condition. So they're already like, this guy, he can't help it. Of course not. So the case is heard on Wednesday morning at the Montreal courthouse.
Yeah, it's just absurd that it's being it's a case at all. I mean, Frankie Boyle has experienced some of this stuff in Britain, and it's similarly, you know, the pressure for people, hey, you can't make fun of this, that kind of stuff is just, you know, if something's good writing, it's good writing. If it's not, it's not. And, you know.
I think that people are they need to have a bad guy.
Well, there's that too, definitely. The press has a history of that.
And I think it's not only the press, but especially in, like, Canada, there's, like, this huge PC... I mean, I thought it was bad here, but Canada is, man, even worse.
Oh, yeah, there's Australia and Britain have actual laws. You can't say certain things. You can't... but there's still people who don't give a damn. They just... They say the stuff anyway, and they... you know, might get banned from the country. There are artists that have been banned from Australia and Britain. It happens, sadly.
It says in Ward's comedy bit, he said he at first humored the attention. Wait, am I having a stroke? In Ward's comedy bit, he said he at first humored. Canadians don't know English very well. They have a lot of French in there, and I think they mix their words up. Or as he called him, Petit Jeremy was getting. I feel like I'm reading this wrong. I can't tell. Okay, so he says, but now five years later, and he's not dead. And he won't die, Ward said. That's not even a joke, really.
Yeah, but who knows in the context of his bit or whatever, you know? It's just absurd on its face that, you know, unless his publicist signed it up, you know, for free press, but which I don't know if that happens, but it's the kind of thing where it's like, why is this even a thing? Why is that a story? Why is that getting publicity that, oh no, this guy made fun of somebody.
I don't know, man. It's getting scary. I feel like thank God for the First Amendment here, but there's
thank reason for the First Amendment.
I guess so, but I mean, we're the only country that has it. There's no other countries
that really have. There are
variations,
but the United States has a few good things about it, and that's one of them.
So what did you say in Gainesville at this open mic?
Not just that open mic, but another open mic and the main showcase show as well. Like, because my material generally is anti-authoritarian, and I rag on cops, I rag on the military, I rag on religion all the time, so, and corporate America, all that stuff. So, at least 3 out of 4 of those is a big no-no in many places in the country, not just there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm too left of center for even a very liberal town like that, at least as far as the few people who are technically in control of those shows or whatever, you know. So, which I mean, it's their business. They own the bars or whatever. I get it, but I don't. I still feel that there's a problem in America where, even though, according to the government, you have the freedom of speech, according to private businesses, you don't. And pretty much America has been coded in a sheet of business. They could effectively annul the First Amendment by just making everything private property. You know, we have to culturally get beyond the obstructions of the First Amendment in private businesses.
Well, so I see your point.
It's a difficult philosophical thing to, but it's something to address of how do you maintain a First Amendment when everything's privatized?
So I guess we're having that debate now with the Marriage Equality Act that passed. Mm-hmm. So there was a couple in, I don't know, someplace here that sued a bakery because they would not make them a cake.
Right. Yeah, that whole thing. Yeah. Like I said, it's unresolved. And depending on how crappy the people are who are, it's a difficult thing. And like I said, I get it. If I owned a business like a bar or whatever, and somebody came in saying crazy stuff that I disagreed with, well, I would just let them say it if it's part of an open mic or whatever. But if it's, you know, it's one of those things of what are you classifying these things as? I can understand somebody not wanting something said in a thing. Don't call it an open mic. Say it's a restricted showcase.
I see your point there. Yeah.
Open mic is an open if you can't.
But there's
a difference in terms of that example of the cake thing. That wasn't a comedy open mic.
But wouldn't it also be, so I see your point, but on the flip side of that, if someone didn't want to hear it and they are on private property, shouldn't they have the right at that point to say, I'd rather not hear this?
They can leave. But if the business, totally. That's one of those things where it's like, how do you then preserve art or writing in any respect, given that very clear conflict in the, you know, in the interests of either side? You know, do you hold, you know, performances in public spaces and not private spaces? You know, like, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. I'm just, like, experiencing some of the...
You can't really do it in public either, because I think if it's in public, there's not free speech in public spaces necessarily. For instance, we had we did this thing at the Don't Stop St. Pete Festival. We had a comedy showcase. It was outside on this little bus thing outside a Sly Bar, and James Bailey was performing. And there was a police officer that was there just kind of hanging out. You know, I'm sure he had to be there. He wasn't watching the show. He had to be there. He was working. And James dropped an F-bomb in the street, and the cop was like, uh-uh, can't do that.
Is that the law, though? I don't know what the law is here. I guess
I think
those
it's
are all
public
local
decency.
Laws.
I think it's a public decency
but
thing.
Yeah, but F that? This is a yeah, you know what I mean. Like, I experience it, like, because one of the coffee shops I do regularly, like, cops occasionally come in for coffee. And I rag on them when they do. And I say every word in the book. And I yell at their faces, like, and I tell them how bigoted they are and how even if they're the nicest person in the world, you work for an institution of authority that is historically primarily there for the purpose of white supremacy and all sorts of... Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'm,
ooh.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like...
That's heavy, man.
Yeah, yeah. The United States criminal justice system is a very corrupt thing. And, yeah, in that sense. And I know that most people don't see it that way. I totally get that. But historically... Although it serves the function of protecting property and protecting people, it also serves the interests of the dominant cultures and ethnicities. And that's not just the case in the United States. That's the case all over the world. It doesn't matter what country you're in. The dominant ethnicity uses the intelligence community and the police forces and the courts to, whether consciously or unconsciously, to skew things in their favor.
So the people in power are supremacists.
Even if not, they could think that they're not racist at all, they're not bigoted at all, but based on the fact that they control institutions that they might not even notice are bigoted, but have a historical lock-in from like a century ago or decades ago, where it's still perpetuating a lot of the injustices or whatever, it's something that's not...
Even here in America?
It's horrific. If you really got into the details, it would make every American like cry if they saw it, but they don't, and that's the problem. They don't. There's a lot of like corporate speak around it. So over the past few decades, it has been like massaged so that it doesn't look as bad as it is. A lot of things have been rebranded, that kind of thing. Like it appears as though a perfectly just, perfectly equal situation, but...
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I'm aware of injustices
right.
that happen in the courts. Drugs, for example. They throw people away for drugs, which is crazy.
That's the primary lever of bigotry in our criminal justice system is the drug war. That is, the drug war was started for bigoted reasons, and it continues... Despite even the head of the DEA might be not at all racist, but if he's ignorant of the fact that his organization is perpetuating racism, then he might as well be because he's not doing anything to change it. And the biggest thing you could do to change it is to dismantle the organization immediately.
I'm for that. That sounds okay to me. I'm pretty much libertarian on just about everything but open borders. But, would you say you're left? I kind of thought you were just kind of like an anarchist.
Well, I am. Yeah. But anarchism is historically libertarian, socialist, leftist, anarchist. There's a lot in America. There's a lot more right wing, capitalist anarchists kind of stuff. There's a wide philosophical breadth in America as far as the political philosophy of anarchism is concerned. But I do consider myself an anarchist, and I'm not always, on every issue, left or right or whatever, but historically, me as a person, I like changing. I like society, or promoting social institutions that are increasing freedom and equality, and not sacrificing one for the other.
Comedian Chris Heiss is joining me on the Homemade Broadcast this week. So, if you know what I want to see you do. Is because I'm very curious, because I've seen your bits a few times. You come to Sly Bar and everything. I want to see, do you ever take those I Side With quizzes, those political spectrum quizzes?
Yeah.
Did you take one?
Not in the past 5 or 10 years, but a long time ago I remember doing one of those things, early internet kind of. I'm definitely libertarian and left in that zone, that bottom corner or whatever of it.
All the way?
But again, this was one that was constructed like a long time ago. To me, I don't want to. I like what those things do to a certain extent, but also I'm critical of them because they kind of pigeonhole people or whatever. You know, then
that's
you become
true.
Like a machine programmed response of something. I like to go by reason and look at a scenario and try to figure out the best solution for it, you know, with the most freedom.
It would probably change every time, too, like day to day, even if you retook the test. Because there only is, like, I think 100-something questions, which is a lot. But that's only 100.
Yeah.
It's not an. I mean, you could go forever, really.
Right, right. And all those sorts of things aren't necessarily scientific. You know, they don't do enough. Like you said, there's only 100 questions. How many people do the study? How many people are willing to sit through 100 questions, let alone 600 that would more accurately approximate their political philosophy, you know, on the spectrum? But yeah, so it's an interesting thing. In culturally or whatever, for people to kind of try to look in the mirror at their political beliefs or whatever, but it's not nothing's perfect.
Yeah. So if you were president, I know you would denounce it as soon as you got it and throw it away.
Yeah, quit.
But what would be your perfect society? What would happen in the day to day?
There is no perfect society. That's the biggest thing that people first need to realize. I mean, there's things you can increasingly approximate. Better aspects of social organization, but there's always going to be noise and error and conflicts of interest, and those need to be. I would say an ideal society would be one that continuously and fearlessly addresses those conflicts of interest publicly and tries to, based on science and reason, resolve them without corruption, without influence by somebody who has a private interest or whatever, you know?
So get rid of the DEA.
Yep.
Get rid of the EPA.
Well, in the meantime, before there are certain things, like DEA can immediately be gotten rid of. EPA is something where, like, if we didn't have the EPA, corporate America already gets away with polluting and killing, like, I don't even know how many Americans every year with pollution, but it's disgusting. And so the EPA stems that to some extent. I would like to see a non-governmental solution to that, but that's going to take a lot of corporate culture change, a lot of just American culture change, where we would actually say we won't stand for that. If my grandpa is an executive at a company giving tens of thousands of kids asthma every year, well, I'm going to slap my grandpa on the face and be like, what are you doing? You know, so until that, it's one of those conflicts where how do you resolve, how do you prevent pollution without some sort of agency? I'm in favor of non-governmental organizations doing that. But in the interim, we have to address the need and also the desire to, as you said, to disorganize, to dismantle the EPA and replace it with something that is like a complex network of individual, you know, special interest groups, I guess it would be. But like, you know, something that would even more freely and expertly prevent pollution without being this government agency saying you can't blah, 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 make money off of, you know. But there is something like every society, that's one of the, again, unresolved conflicts, every society has lost. It should be illegal to give kids cancer and asthma, but it's not.
But see, with the EPA, for example, it was already getting better. The graph was on the upturn as far as pollution and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and then they came in, and then it continued to go up. And then they were like, see, look what the EPA is doing.
Right, right. And that's one of the things, too, about and one of the things that liberals should note and realize and address often is that most oftentimes government organizations that are put in place to regulate private industry are immediately co-opted by private industry.
Right. You can just buy whatever you want.
Yeah, you put your people in there, or the people that are in there know that they'll get a fat check when they get out going to work or lobby for them. So, I mean, and that's a giant conflict of interest. And it's not addressed not just in this sort of scenario, but in all across the board of our country. Like, you're allowed to be a public servant, so to speak, and then immediately go work for a company that undermines the public service you're supposedly doing. Giant conflict of interest. You know, plumbers and roofers have more conflict of interest prevention, you know, whatever, rules than politicians and corporate executives and lobbyists and all this stuff. So it's a very complicated problem, but it's also something that we don't even address because those same corporate interests and government interests like suppress it or whatever. But yeah, it's a complicated, you know, scenario.
It is, and I have conversation. Me and my friend Kevin were talking yesterday about. We always end up talking politics, and it's really annoying because politics usually end up you get in a fight,
right,
with your friend, and you don't want to fight with your friend.
No, yeah, and I never do. When I get in political discussions all the time, but I'm like, I don't know if it's I'm not absolutist, so I like hearing other people's opinions, even if they disagree with me. You know?
Yeah, like I try to keep an open mind too. I obviously have my beliefs too. I just kind of get disheartened, I guess, more than fight. I just kind of get sad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's part of it.
But I guess that's part of it.
You know? Yeah, that's part of us realizing, hey, maybe let's rethink this or that. Or, and, like, it's not necessarily a bad thing to be disheartened in an argument.
I think that there's absolutes on both sides of the, you know, conservative and the liberals who put themselves on that spectrum. They have these... just beliefs that you cannot change their mind.
Yeah, they act like machines.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
And it's when you get like that, I guess that's when you fight. Because, you know, it's like calling, it's your religion. Yeah. It's calling your sports team, you know, telling them that they suck. Yeah, your sports team sucks.
Yeah, you set the program to be irreconcilably conflicted. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, what are you going to do now? There's only you can fight at that point. And it's like, it's pointless, except for the people that want to win an argument by coercion.
Right.
You know.
I guess, and that's the whole idea of arguing too, is you got to coerce the other person to come onto your side.
But you coerce via reason and logic, and not via actual coercion. People usually wouldn't consider science or logic to be coercive. It'd be convincing, and it might be an uncomfortable truth that you realize through the actual research people do or whatever. But if you tested the research and you've done the studies correctly and it's been peer-reviewed and all that, then it's like one of those things where as you get more and more used to, you know, whatever, the philosophy of science or whatever, you're like, okay, yeah, if that's the best evidence we have right now, that's what I'm going to go with for now, you know, as long as it wasn't corrupted in some way.
I get a lot of things, too, because you can always have data. You can have this mass amount of data. And you can get this data to say two different things. If you zoom in on it or zoom out on it,
right.
It's really, I guess it goes back to that truth thing. Like if there's even a real truth or fact or
it more
answer.
So definitely in particular with social science stuff that's not like physics, it's very easy to get old hard
math.
Facts.
Yeah.
It's just math. The rock is going to hit this other rock at this time. Like, with human beings, any type of thing like political science or economics, you know, finance, sociology, anthropology, these things are inherently so complex that they can't be minimized to absolutist positions. And that should be one of the first things that everybody recognizes in the sense of, like, when people are arguing their points or whatever. Like, it's too complex to be absolutist at all. The very notion of being absolutist regarding political beliefs is absurd on its face.
Right. So, yeah, I guess that's with anything. I always ask that question, like, whoever I'm talking to at the time. I had this professor on a little while ago. Just trying to find the truth in these things can be so infuriating. Because I was fighting with my buddy, and he's like, well, you know, my stuff, I look stuff up. And I know he does. He's not a dumb guy. He's like, mine's based on facts. And that was really insulting, I thought, to me. Because, like, what do you think I'm doing? Do you think I'm just spouting this off at the top of my head? Like, give me some credit, man. I fight with a lot of people. My stepfather's another good example of that. Like, we can't even be in the same room at this point.
Yeah, that happens a lot of time. With people arguing, they have different sets of facts that seemingly conflict.
But it's the same. It's the same. The data has to be the same. And also, you struggle with the sample size, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're only getting, I mean, even if you interview 10,000 people, that's still such a small amount of the people
and
on the planet.
Interview, like, survey, survey results are not hard science. Like we were just saying regarding sociology or political science or whatever, like it's different than physics. It's different than even biology. And, you know, it's surveys are notoriously corruptible. And especially if they're being used for a political purpose, it's almost a guarantee it's a fraud in some way. So there are people who regularly pretend to science using surveys. People on TV, you know, regularly. Even people making political points, you know, on different shows on TV. And it's just one of those things where the public has to be educated enough to realize, oh, that's not at all a truth, as you were just saying. Like, that's a potentially corrupted and influenced and biased result that somebody that was looking for a certain view finagled the, you know,
zoom in or zoom out
to make it.
Get it to say whatever you want.
Right, and now that's just talking about like research that's done using surveys, which again, people's opinions and their characterizations of their beliefs is so easily whatever you can so easily skewed and malleable. It's you can just there's so much room for just error in the person's own perception and communicating that to somebody else that it's very easy for unscrupulous people to just manipulate the hell out of that.
Yeah. Comedian Chris Heiss is joining me on the Homemade Broadcast this week. So the thing, too, with there's this thing called belief perseverance, I believe is what it's called. And that means when you're faced with evidence that goes against a truth, a belief that you have that you know is right, you will become more steadfast in that belief no matter what you are shown. That's a flaw in the human consciousness,
so now
the human nature.
Cognitive dissonance in psychology, like the guy who studied that originally, whatever, came up with that, Festinger or whatever, he was he studied cult, like millennial cults that thought the end of the world was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And he and his fellow psychologists went into the cult as participants and observed that when the date came and the world didn't end, everybody didn't call BS and walk away. They doubled down.
Yeah.
They were like, and that's,
Who was that guy? He was always on the radio. And I remember it was like October 13th, like 2012 or something like that. He predicted the end of the world. He's on the radio here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think he was nationwide.
Yeah, it was a big
deal. That guy was it Larry Eller or Larry Heller?
Somebody who was either crazy or, but he's either crazy or corrupt. And because authoritarian leaders, whether religious or otherwise, can use that tactic. They know about it. I mean, it was kind of understood in what I would imagine would be con artist circles of antiquity. But now, ever since the 50s, when Festinger did the studies and stuff, like it's been one of the most known psychological principles. So every jerkish cult leader wannabe was going to be using that. You know, knowing that, I should make more predictions. The more wrong predictions, the better for me, you know, so.
Yeah, well, it's got to be, you would think it would be embarrassing for him a little bit because I was listening to him on the radio and it was fascinating. You know, you'd have people call in and talk about it, how to prepare for it, what you need to do. And I was getting excited for the date. And then, you know, either way, I was like, this is going to be great. Either he's going to be wrong and we can all laugh at him, or it's actually going to happen, and that would be a neat day. It's going to be scary.
And then we shake his hand.
And then we shake his hand.
After the apocalypse.
You did it, man.
You got it right.
You nailed it. You called it, bro. Good for you. So I was a little disappointed. And then I did some research about him after, of course, it was nonsense. Mm-hmm. And this was like his seventh or eighth date that he predicted in the last 50 years.
Yeah, so
and for some reason he's on the radio. I don't know how the hell he gets radio time.
Well, because the radio, the broadcasters know the same thing that he knows, that some of the public, even some of the public, first of all, believe it and are intrigued and their eyeballs are locked onto that media. But many people just love ridicule, and as do I. I mean, I'm a comic, so like the broadcasters know that that's going to be a big audience, that many people are going to be listening just to be like, yeah, listen to this crazy idiot. And that's an entertainment. It's all about entertainment.
It was very entertaining, I got to say. So you've been doing comedy for how long now?
Technically, I've been doing on stage 2 years about. And I wrote, I did a video anti-war website that was comedy that for like 10 years ago or whatever.
Like a podcast?
No, it was like a strange sort of very short-form, amateur-as-hell daily show, but more anarchistish.
Did you stop doing that?
Yeah, in 2010 I stopped doing that, and because it got so frustrating of, like, you know, you're commenting on all this stuff. You know, you go through phases of, like, the world is so depressing and idiotic that at times you think, But it was fun. I enjoyed it for a while, and I guess just schedule-wise or whatever, I got into other things. I started making more long-form, trying more long-form documentary projects and stuff like that. And but I loved it, and it was a great, you know, vehicle to express my opinion, you know, my thoughts on how I think the world sucks.
Have you ever thought about doing a podcast?
Yeah, people keep telling me, because I do political stuff or whatever, they're like, you should totally do a podcast. But I'm not into it. I'm not, like, necessarily, you know, I don't want to, I'm just not, first of all, you know, there's so many, you know, but I like being, if I'm going to do something, I want to be different. You know what I mean? So I want it, like really different. Like, I love podcasts, but like, now I want to, it would be much shorter, the whole hour, 2 hour, 3 hour thing. I would want something, you know, and I would want something video, you know, because I have a history of editing video, and I love doing that, and trying to make little pieces of very, very, very short films, essentially.
Right.
I would rather do, like, there's a couple people, like, Tom Simmons does a weekly thing, I think, where he chimes in, like, a Daily Show-ish thing or whatever, for 5 minutes or something like that. And that's all right, but I would want, even that, you know, as even the stuff that I used to do, where it would be like 2 minute videos where I'm not on camera. It's just, it's like overdubbed, you know, like news, ragging on the news. And, even if I was to go back to doing something in that vein, it would be something, I would try to make it something that was, yeah, that nobody was doing, because that's just me. I like to do stuff.
I think this is your anarchist persona coming out, because you don't want to be
right. If I'm writing something, I don't want it to be like anything else.
This is what I don't like about anarchists, is because they're just they have ideas, and some of them have really great ideas, but then they're like, once I have
I get it. Like, I'm in a music project with a friend of mine, and he's even more like that than me, in the sense of your music. Like, we'll be writing something, like, some really complex whatever, and then it'll get to the point where it's just like, it'll, you know, you keep adapting and changing it and adjusting things, and it'll get to the point where now it's just noise, just shh.
Right.
And we had fun getting there, but it was really cool before that. We could have stopped like halfway in the process and been like, wow, that's a great track or whatever. But yeah, it's just one of those. So there is a, let's say there is a curve to that
you don't have the organization to kind of, or not discipline, but discipline in the sense of you have to do this. So I think you might look at that and be like, I don't want to have to do anything.
Right.
Just because that goes against your belief system of.
And that's a constant process. And anybody who writes, you know, that's a constant, it's a constant editing process. You can go, you can think everything you do sucks, even though it's great. Or you can think everything you do is great, even though it sucks.
Yeah.
Which is more common.
I noticed that the really good comedians here think they suck. And the really bad ones think they're really good.
Yeah. That's everything. It doesn't matter if you're, it doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah.
That dynamic exists.
I wonder if it's just because they're like, oh, I'm just being humble, or, but I think that they really don't like what they do. They're
very great. Just self-critical. You get better by being self-critical.
That's true. You should be your own worst critic.
Yeah. So if you're obsessed with the fact that your project isn't good enough yet, then you make it better. And if you think your project is awesome already, you don't try to make it better. As mm-hmm. simple as that.
I had this one guy. He used to come to the open mic a lot. I think he came once in the past 8 months now. I don't know what happened, but I got the impression that he just started doing stand-up, and he was on the path, another 6 months, I'm going to have my HBO special. That's the persona he had. And I follow him on Twitter. He'd reach out to all these celebrities like, hey, man, let me get on tour with you. Let me hop on. Like, thought it was just that easy. I don't understand what the thought process was there, but it was infuriating.
Yeah, exactly. It's repellent.
It is, but I mean, so me in my situation, I don't really care. Like, do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But it was funny to watch.
Oh, yeah.
And the alienation that took place with other people because...
Exactly.
He thought he was just the best.
Yeah.
He was the greatest.
Exactly. It's the kind of thing, like, you see occasionally, you'll see, like, there was one comic I saw recently in another city that was, like, just a male model. like straight out of Zoolander.
Yeah.
And like went on stage and went, hey, everybody, I get laid all the time. And it wasn't like he was just bragging.
Right.
He was just like, I'm awesome.
There was no punchline to it. It was just
his punchline was I'm awesome.
Yeah.
And everybody in the room was just like, quiet, I hate you.
Yeah.
It was just like.
I've never really seen that be a successful strategy for comedy. You kind of have to hate yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
And be very critical of yourself. Yeah. Make fun of yourself in order for it to work.
Right. And I even hate it sometimes when I see like comics like do that too much, where it's like, okay, this is clearly
a
facade, and this is clearly a gimmick or a way for you to.
That's when you can tell if the fake humbleness.
Yeah.
If they're too much on that end.
And even comics I love, I occasionally hear say, I'm an idiot. And I'm like, no, you're not.
Stop it. Yeah. Shut up. I wanted to mention this because you have a show at the Pegasus Lounge.
Yep.
But unfortunately, this is not going to air by the time this happens.
Oh, awesome.
So it's kind of useless, but we'll mention it anyways, I guess. Chris, you got a show at the Pegasus Lounge. 1008 North 30th Street in Tampa.
I think 10,008, but it doesn't matter. No, if you're hearing this right now, it was 2 days ago, and
I'm sorry about that. I thought we had time. That's why I wanted to get you in before. I should have been in last week then. But we did it because you're driving all this way,
exactly,
and this way you can come in, do this. We can go to Sly Bar, two birds with one stone.
Exactly.
So that's my fault. I dropped the ball.
I don't care, man. No, it's fine.
I'm sure this is one of many, though. You seem very motivated to do something.
I like doing shows, but it's all up to the business. If the business is willing, like Pegasus was, like whatever, a small enough place that they don't care. At least they didn't care about me, you know, doing a show there. They were cool with me. And even still, they were like, you're an unknown comic. We're going to have bands afterwards.
Right. So, are you having any openers? Or
no, I'm just doing, because they're only giving me so much time.
How much time do you got?
They're giving me an hour and a half to do whatever I can.
Whoa, can you do an hour and a half?
I'm going to try to do, like, I have more than that material that I'm trying to lay down on tape. And if I can get it out, if I can do an hour 15, hour and 20, whatever I can get out where people aren't bored as hell, because I am very boring. Like,
that's crazy, because an hour is, like, would be the most I want to see anybody.
Oh, yeah,
I don't care
and again, like, I'm this is like, you know, potentially, if I can make it into an album, I can make it into an album. If I can't, I can't. But, it's the kind of thing where you overshoot the mark, you know? I would only release an hour. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Because you can, especially some of the bits I do are reliant on crowd participation to a certain extent. And if I screw something up, or if they don't respond the way I need them to respond for the way I want the bit to go or whatever, then it's, you know, that one doesn't work. Toss that one, you know? So I overshoot the mark to whatever extent I can, and then, you know.
So how many mics are you doing a week that you can't even perform in your own hometown right now?
Right, right.
And you're driving around, you're saying you're hitting four in a night?
Today, yeah, Tuesday. Tuesday is four and or five, depending on the week, you know, when Sly Bar's doing it or whatever. So, yeah, between three and five, depending on the Tuesday. And then two now, because there's the new one on Wednesdays. So I come to Tampa Tuesday, stay over, do Wednesday also, and that's just in and of itself between five and seven mics. And then I do the one in Jacksonville on Monday, and then the one guitar open mic in Gainesville that is run by the guy who's really in favor of free speech is on Sunday. So, somewhere, you know, over seven a week.
That's good, man. That's what you got to do.
Yeah.
That's why I like you. You're a hard worker. And I'm sorry that we didn't get your show in. That's my bad.
I do not care. It's fine.
You should care, because I care, because that was the whole reason I had you.
It's all word of mouth, like, anyway, you know, like, if people come out, they come out. If they don't, they don't.
Well, you have a positive attitude, Chris Heist. I appreciate you coming in. Do you have any social media or anything?
Yeah, I got videos on YouTube. I'm on Facebook. Friend me on Facebook or whatever, or check out the videos on YouTube.
Heist, H-E-I-S-T.
Yep.
You find them on there. You don't have a Twitter?
Yeah, actually, I do have a Twitter, too. Yeah.
What's that?
Just my name.
Chris Heist.
Yeah, it's at Wars for Suckers.
Is that really it?
Yeah.
At Wars for Suckers.
Spelled out.
All one word, no underscores.
Yep. Just WARISFOR.
I'm going to follow Chris Heist on Twitter right now as well. You can follow me on Twitter, home_made_man, Facebook, HMB Radio, RadioSaintPete.com, HMBRadio.com, Facebook.com/RadioSaintPete. Come to the open mics every second and fourth Tuesday at Sly Bar. I'm going to talk to them about doing it weekly. Now.
Oh, hell yeah.
I kind of mentioned it to them, and they were not saying no, but okay. They definitely did not say yes
okay.
either.
That would be awesome.
I don't want to burn anybody out, though, either. I kind of like the every other Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, if the audience will come every week, that'd be great.
It would. I'm looking forward to the future. Maybe we'll do something up North County or something cool. at some point. Chris, thank you again,
thank
man.
You.
We'll talk to you soon.
Cool.
Have a great week.
You too.
Problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more. Problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more.